John's Gospel, chapter 9. Now, you really need to look on a Bible with someone. If you don't have one, just nudge the person next to you and say, can I look on? And because I'm going to be literally just walking through an experience in the life of Jesus that I think is an experience that is very analogous to that which the church has. And a church is called upon to make a profound difference in the environment of which it is a part. And all of us are serving the Lord, and because we want to do precisely that. We want to be a mighty witness for Him in the places that He allows us to be. Now, John chapter 9, and I'm going to begin reading at the first verse, and I'm only going to read, you know, through about verse 7, but I'm going to talk about the rest of the verses as well. And as Jesus passed by, He saw a man which was blind from his birth. And His disciples asked Him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. Hang on to that. The works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of Him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When He had thus spoken, He spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and He anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay and said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way, therefore, and washed, and came seeing. I want to continue on this theme of a great gift from a very gracious God. It's one of the marvelous things about God that He's always trying to find ways to gift us, to give us that which we can use in the world in order to draw people to Him. That is the only reason that He gifts us anyways. He doesn't gift us in order that we might become some superstar standing alone, you know, bringing glory to ourselves, but rather He gifts us so that we might have the capacity to make a difference in the environment of which we are part. And it's one of the high privileges, the great honors that God bestows upon each of us, that He says, I want to manifest something in you. I want you to become my showcase. I want you to become the stage on which I display my glory. I want to draw you from sitting beside the road and traveling with me on the highway of reaching people with the good news about Jesus Christ, that He is Lord, He is God. He's more than a man and more than a prophet. He is the Son of God. It's a wonderful thing that God is so gracious that He would gift us in that way. And one of the ways that He has gifted us is that He's given us this irresistible urge to do good. It is in us. It's been crippled by Adam and Eve's missteps. It's been damaged by the temptation that seduced them. They got lured away from the counsel of God, and they ended up with that which God had given them damaged in them. What was damaged was their capacity to use it, to magnify God, the capacity to release that urge to do good, in order that other people might experience God. And we're told by John the Apostle, in chapter 10, verse 10, that who did this was a thief. Someone is trying to steal the glory that belongs to God. And someone who's out to steal from us the great honor that we can have by yielding ourselves fully to the work of God. They said, a thief cometh but for to steal to kill and destroy. Look out, there's somebody trying to keep you from doing God's work. There is somebody trying to work overtime to keep you from being a stage on which God displays his power. There's somebody who does not have your interest in heart, who wants you to misuse the talents that he's given to you and to run away from the call he has placed upon your life to do good whenever and wherever God makes the opportunity available. Now, maybe you can understand this text I'm going to use now, because this text just merely begins by saying, and Jesus passed by. He's going to pass by a situation that needs God's attention. And he's going to demonstrate for us what a wonderful thing it is when that capacity in us, that urge in us to do good, is fully freed from the control of the evil one. He becomes a perfect example of one who always gave vent to the urge to do good. Anytime, anywhere, any place, he was available to do what? Respond to that which he passed by. He passed by. I find in this text a marvelous challenge to all of us, and that is to give ourselves to the twin objectives of God. The call to do good, and how can we do it? By honoring God and serving others. Honoring God, serving others. We are all a candidate for achieving that, for doing that. He says, I have placed within you a desire that's been crippled, and I want to come where you are and set you free from that which keeps you from doing what God created you to do. And that is to honor him and serve others. In fact, we honor him best when we do what? Serve others. And somehow in his own day and time, the religion of its day had been hijacked by a group of men who thought that somehow that they could become the personification of God without really giving God their heart. And they did a lot of things, but they never gave God their heart. And as a consequence, they could not really honor him, and nor could they really serve others. Rather, they turned the whole thing around and said, hey, God, see how good I am? Don't I look good as I stand on the corners praying? Can't you see how good I am? Look what I put in the offering plate. God, I know you're pleased with me because we're not as other men are. And we know that they were very, very far from God because they haven't given God the one thing that he wants to accomplish, the plan he has for their lives. And that is that God said, I created you to honor me and allow me to work through you to serve others. That's your assignment. And Jesus passes by, and he saw a man. We're not told the man's name, simply because that's not the real purpose. The real purpose is to know how God can use people who are willing to give their heart to him and really make themselves available to achieve his purpose for their lives. And that is people who are just willing to honor him anywhere, everywhere, and do so by helping others, serving others, bringing grace to others. Well, he sees a man, and the man was blind from his birth. And his disciples saw the same man, and his disciples decided to ask him a question. Now watch this. God is honored when we rescue people from darkness. God is honored when we rescue people from darkness. Right there at the beginning, he sees the man, and he sees a man with a great potential to make his stage available to God. Jesus sees a man who has this great potential to have a mighty work manifested in his life so that other people can see and know God. Jesus sees a man that God can use in a great way sitting by the side. But his disciples see a man. But what they see is the man's condition. That the man is just simply blind sitting there. And what's on their mind? They see a theological question that needs to be resolved. And the question is simply this, as they ponder the man. Lord, who did sin? This man or his parents, that he should be born blind? Jesus knows that there is no greater honor that you can give God to be involved in the work of education. There's no greater honor you can give God than to set somebody's mind free from ignorance. There is no greater work you can do for God than to be involved in opening people's eyes so that they can understand what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad, and what is of God and what is not of God. There is no higher calling on this earth than the calling to open a mind. That's not Ron Fowler saying that. I believe that's God saying that. Because what do we do as teachers? We help students take possession of a good conscience so that whatever field they go into, they can make decisions that honor God. And not make decisions that merely honor themselves. A good conscience is what we get as a result of a good education. That's why I'm so grateful that the church here in Cayman Islands, you've had a long, distinguished history of equipping young people with a good conscience so that they might not have just success, but that they might have what? Good success. That they can be men and women for God. That they can rightly divide the word of God. That they can help take a stand for what is right and what is wrong. We have premier institutions in our nation. And part of me, the tragedy is that so many of those young people matriculate through those schools and end up being educated fools because they do not have a good conscience. And part of what our world has gone through now is seeing the result of men and women in high places who do not have a good conscience. Who were their teachers? Who helped them to understand the things of God? And so Jesus, he takes time to do what is his primary calling. He is a teacher. And his disciples have some darkness in their mind. Who did sin? And Jesus said, well, neither. Because this man's condition is not a consequence of missteps or some wrong. God is not punishing this man, since he was blind from birth, for his parents. There are situations in which parents can cause children to get a poor start on life by their lifestyles and how they play with genetic material. But this is not that case. This young man did nothing wrong. But he is there because God permitted him to be there for his glory. For his glory. There are some infirmities that God allows to come into our lives for his glory and for our good. The Apostle Paul wanted so badly to be relieved of this thorn in his flesh, but he came to understand, no, God permitted it to be there, permitted him to be buffeted by it, that he might keep his will in subjection to God's will. I learned this lesson in a very painful way. There was a young lady in our community who came to our church, and she rushed forward and knelt down at the aisle at the end of a Sunday evening service. I went down to pray with her and discovered that her life was in wreck, was in ruin. And she was saying, "Preacher, can God help me?" I said, "God can help anybody." And she said, "My husband and I were on the run from the law, and we're living a miserable life, and we have a child, and we're not raising that child properly. I'm tired of running. Can you help me?" God can help you. You can trust Him with your life. If you yield it to Him at this moment, I'm here to tell you He will walk with you and clean up all the mess that has been created by your lifestyle of disobedience. And she did. She yielded her life to God. She said, "What do I do next?" I said, "You go home. You go home and you trust God, then I'll be by to see you tomorrow. Would you come and see?" "I'll be there tomorrow to see you. And if your husband is around, I'd love for him to be there." Sure enough, she was there, but her husband was not there. And she said, "What do I do?" "You keep on trusting God. You trust Him day one, now trust Him day two. And He'll help you clean up this mess." She said, "I don't know how I'm going to feed my family because I don't even know where my husband is. He may be gone because he's running from the law." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I tell you what, you'll just have to go look for a job and we'll help you. And do you have your high school diploma?" "No." "Well, you go to school. You go back to school and get that." "And but I'm too old." "It doesn't matter. We have an evening school for adults. Go back and get it." And she did. And she came back with that diploma and waving it in front of me. And I said, "Girl, you did it." She said, "I did it." And I said, "What you going to do next?" She said, "You know what? I think I ought to go to college." I said, "Go to college?" She said, "I don't know how I'm going to pay the bill." And I said, "I don't know what's coming tomorrow either. But go to college." And she went to college. And she came to me. She said, "I'm in a math class. Pastor, I don't know what to do." "We'll get you a tutor. You can do it." She finished. She got an A out of the math class. The next thing you know, years have passed, time has moved. She's graduated from the university. And who was there to take her picture when she walked across that stage? I was front and center with my camera. I gotcha. I said, "What are you going to do next?" She said, "I got to get a job. I'm head over heels in debt." "Yeah, you got to work a little bit. But you can go back to grad school and you can take a course, can't you?" She said, "Pastor, you're always pushing me to go to school." "Yeah, because God gave us something we've got to develop. It's called the mind. And if you develop it so that you can think like God, your conscience will help you make critical decisions about how to manage your life. I want you to have the best conscience you can have." You know, she got her PhD degree. She gave me a copy of her dissertation. 2 weeks later, she learned she had a fatal illness. I said, "God, you can't do this." She's been on the road all these years working hard. And you can't take her from us now. She went through all of the treatments that were available. Within 3 years, she was dead and gone. And I remember going to her bedside before she left. And I remember her praying for me. I came to pray for her. And she prayed for me. And she said, "Pastor, it's okay. I've had a short time, you know, to be with this illness. But in that short time, I have brought more people to Christ as a result of this experience. Maybe God wanted to use me. And if He did, that's okay." Some things God permits for his glory. And he needs special people to work through who have a mind that is deeply committed that I am here to honor him and do as much good as I can for others. Knowing that when we finish our work and go home, what is right, God said, I will pay. And she lived a wonderful life. Jesus said, this man did not do anything wrong. This is for God's glory. Don't always be quick to assume somebody's done something wrong because they're going through something bad. God often uses the weak to manifest himself. He often reminds us that just as Job's friends were wrong, he did nothing wrong. God is out to win the world to him, and sometimes he uses our circumstances to reveal the exceeding greatness of his power. I remember saying to myself, oh, God, give me a face that will hang steady, remain faithful while the storm is passing over. Keep me faithful to you while I go through a tough place. Sometimes we need to change our prayer life because we Christians are so quick to want to say, God, get me out, get me out. Hey, God, get me out. Something, get me out. And God says, when are you going to grow up and get strong enough to say, hey, God, take me through. Take me through it. Take me through it. I'll live for him who died for me. We sing that song. My daily prayer is, oh, God, give me strength to bear up under whatever you permit to come my way. Whatever it is, I will not complain. I'll love you through it all. God is honored when we rescue people from darkness. That's what Jesus is doing for his disciples. Secondly, God is honored when we redeem time. When we redeem time. Time is a precious commodity with God. And so many people spend all their time waiting for some great opportunity to come their way. Something big. I remember a young guy coming to me and said, Pastor, I'm going to do something big in life. And I said, oh, yeah? I said, yeah. And I said, well, why don't you start by doing something small? And just maybe, if you do it well enough, God will trust you to give you something big. Why don't you just do something small? You see if God won't trust you to do something big. Part of what Jesus understood is that I must work the works of him, see that in verse 4, that sent me while it is day. Now you can't run through that too fast. Because the night cometh, you will not always have the same opportunities that you might have right now. Then God says, I make myself available to people. But every time I don't make myself available the same way. Today, if you hear his voice, harden not your heart. Why does the Bible put stress on act upon the opportunities that God give you? However small they might be, do good. Because you never know where those small acts of kindness will lead you. Just do good wherever you can. This dawned upon me during my during my retirement celebration. There was a lady who came to one of the public receptions that the church had for my wife and I. And she was all dressed up in her fineries And as I came by, she said, Reverend, you don't know me. And I said, that's been my loss. So please help me to know who you are. And She said, well, I got to take you back about 20 years. I said, okay, let's go back 20 years. Where did our lives cross? She said, you were driving down Arlington Street, where your church is. I said, that's right. And she said, and I was standing at a bus stop with my two little boys, and it was raining, and it was in November. It was very cold. And you saw us, and you stopped and said, lady, I am Reverend Fowler, and I'm going downtown. Do you need a ride? I said, did I do that? She said, yes, you did that. I said, well, I'm glad I did that. And what else did I do? She said, you drove me down to the social service office and asked me, did I know anybody in there? You knew some people inside. I said that. She said, yeah. I said, wow. What else did I do? You agreed that you would go in and introduce me to the supervisor, the guy who runs the whole department because he's a member of your church. But I told you I don't think, you know, I needed that. I said, I offered to do that. She said, yes. I said, wow. What happened after that? She said, I was down as low as I could get that day. In fact, I was thinking about even ending my life, but I had my two kids and I couldn't do it. You didn't know that. You didn't know that my husband had walked off and left me. You didn't know that I did not know how we were going to stay where we were living. I was going to get food for my kids. I didn't have a job, and I was ill even at the time. But you were willing to help me, and you took me to the office. And I said, well, how did you get from that condition? You look mighty prosperous right now, you know? And she said, they helped me get a scholarship to go to school. And I went to nursing school, and I graduated. And I worked. She said, it was rough. I made a lot of sacrifice, but I worked. And as a consequence, I got one job after the other. I kept going up. I'm a supervisor now, you know, of the hospital, nursing department. And she said, God has blessed me. I said, to God be the glory. You redeemed the time. You took advantage of that moment. And God propelled you upward. What if you had just wasted that opportunity? She said, but the reason I wanted to come to this reception for you is to tell you thanks for helping me. I said, well, hey, why don't we both tell him thanks? Because he's the one who inspired me to take advantage of a small opportunity to do good. To help someone who was in distress. And I never dreamed it would go where it went. And now look at you. See, that's why we Christians live such boring lives. We pass up opportunities. It would have been just as easy for me to keep my car, drive on down that road and say, now wait, you're a man, she's a woman, nah. But in that circumstance, rain downpouring in November, ill-dressed, ill-clad, two little children, she needed help. And it doesn't take a whole lot of the Holy Ghost to say, help her. And part of the story that Jesus said, there's two religious figures just kept passing by a man who was on the side of the road bleeding to death. And they could not hear God say, help him. But a Samaritan came that way and stopped and took advantage of a small opportunity. And that event is preached all over the world. All Jesus did was respond to a small opportunity. He saw the man. The man did not even ask him to do anything. There was nobody there to pay him to do anything. Out of the compassion of his own heart, he just simply did good. He did good. He did good. He did good. He reached down and got some mud, spit on it, the dirt, made a spittle, put it on his eye, and told the man, go wash, and Jesus left. Wasn't looking for any immediate praise. He just did good. You know, I told my church, I long to see a time when all of us get inspired to spend every day blessing at least one person. Before that sun goes down, give something away to somebody. Do something good for somebody. Help somebody along the way. And watch how God will enrich your life. And even at times, open a window in heaven and pour you out a blessing. You don't have room to receive it from doing something small. I remember once I told our congregation, it was springtime, and my gardener had passed away, had died. Henry Reed had passed away. And he always kept our church beautified on the outside. And I remember telling the church on that Sunday following, I said, I'm going to miss Brother Henry because he had a gift. His gift was beautification. He planted flowers. And I don't want people coming to our church and not see flowers on the outside in the spring. Plant flowers. God's house should be attractive and it should produce an aroma. And I love flowers too. I said, but some of you don't have the gift of flowering. So this is not an appeal for you. But if you have that gift, why don't you just make yourself a committee of one and put some flowers out there and take care of it. Little did I know, I kind of said it tongue in cheek, but little did I know, 3 weeks later, on a Saturday, I'm driving over to my office and I pull up and the parking lot is full of people. And I'm looking around saying, what's going on at the church? They said, didn't you say you wanted somebody to beautify the church? Yes. Well, Sister Daniels called us. Who appointed her to call anybody? Nobody appointed her. No resolution was passed. On her own, she got on the phone and said, Pastor wants this church beautified. And she organized a voluntary group and then came to me and said, Pastor, we need some money. And I went to the treasurer and said, give them some money. She said, but this hasn't gone through the finance committee. Give them some money. Don't stop them. They're doing something good and small. And I cannot tell you what a blessing that committee has become to our church. So I got bold and told them, you know, we own now just about all the block here. And there's a vacant area down from our church near the next corner. And it looks bad. Look like to me somebody ought to do something about that area. One of our members got a committee together, drew up a plan and came and presented it. You said you want something to happen. Yeah. Here's our plan. We're going to beautify that area. We're going to put a park in there. It's going to be a prayer garden. And we're going to have benches so that people can come and sit and meditate and pray. We're going to put a post box there where they can leave prayer requests. And we're going to invite people in the community. If you have a prayer need, just leave your request here and someone will take it out at the end of the day and remember you in prayer. And the prayer garden is there. It's beautiful. I told him, why don't you come over to my house? Watch this. Let me move a little faster. The tragedy of people living small lives is that they're too busy with small stuff. And they haven't found something that's really worth giving themselves to do. It could be holding a child, coming to our nursery and rocking a baby. It can be encouraging a youngster. It can be feeding somebody through the food kitchen, the food pantry. It can be helping somebody find their way through to a higher degree of learning. It can be tutoring. God said, I create opportunities. There are people sitting by with a need for divine assistance. Watch me. I don't need anybody to commission me to go and help this man. I'll spit on the ground. I'll make a spittle. I'll put it on his eye and I'll say, go wash. And then I'll walk away and trust God for the results. Redeeming time. Giving yourself to doing something that can make a difference in somebody's life. Now watch this. God is honored when we reclaim what belongs to God. When we reclaim what belongs to God. This man was so excited that somebody would care enough to come and try to help me. Somebody took time to try to help me regain my sight. He got up and started walking. I don't know how he walked. He must have staggered because he's got mud on his eyes. How am I going to get there? I don't know, but help me, somebody. Take me to the pool of Siloam. Why? Because a man, I don't even know his name. I just call him a man. He came and put mud on my face, on my eyes, and told me to go wash. I got to go wash. I know I don't look pretty with all this mud on my face. I know I don't look attractive. And I know some of you think I'm crazy. But a man put something on me and said, go wash. He believes that if I will live in obedience to what he said, something good is going to happen. I'm going to wash. I don't care if you laugh at me. I'm going to wash. I don't care if you talk about me. I'm going to wash. I don't care if you reject me. I'm going to wash. Call me crazy, but I'm going to do what he said do. Mud on his face. Walking. Asking people to guide him. He gets to the pool and he throws water on his face and suddenly he opens his eyes. And for the first time in his life, he was blind, but now I see. That's all he knows. He hasn't had time to sit down and talk with all the theologians. He just said, I can't tell you who did it. It was a man. I believe he was a prophet, but he told me to go wash, and I washed. And could it be that this is the Messiah? Watch it. God is out to reclaim what belongs to him. Because you see, that man sitting there had the potential to praise God. His praise is dried up because he's blind from his birth. His praise is dried up because he's not living a very useful life. His praise is dried up because he hasn't had anybody to help open his understanding about what he can become under God. His praise is dried up because nobody there thinks he's a person of influence. Nobody there believes that he'll make a profound difference in life. Nobody's there to invest in what he can become. His praise is dried up, but God said, I'm out to reclaim what belongs to God. I'm going to do a work in your life that sets the joy bells free in you. You can praise God. And they try to steal his praise. And who did this? I can't tell you who did this. Are you the same young man that was blind? He said, I'm the same one. Got his parents and said, now folks, is this your boy? Yes. Is this the same boy that was born blind? Yes. Who did this? He said, well, he's of age. You got to ask him. We've been talking to him, and he keeps talking about this man who told him to go do it, and he called this man, surely must be a prophet. We're getting nowhere with him. Can you tell us who did this, and how did he do it? He said, well, he's of age. Why don't you ask him? They called him back in again. He said, I can't stop doing what God has set me free to do. I'm praising God. I don't know how he did it. I don't know who the man is, but all I know is once I was blind, but now I see. And they excommunicated him. Kicked the fella out of the church. Put him out. Now watch this. When Jesus heard that he had held steady during the trial. When Jesus heard that he wouldn't change his testimony, when Jesus heard that he paid a price for his faith, when Jesus heard that they couldn't change his mind, couldn't make him renege on what the truth that had happened in his life, when Jesus heard that they booted the fella out, Jesus went looking for him. He said, oh, God can use a man like that who can remain faithful in the midst of a storm. God can use a man like that who won't change his mind because people are downgrading him and diminishing him. He said, God can use a man like that who remains faithful to praising God through his circumstance. And Jesus went and found the man. And when Jesus found him, he had to ask him a question. In fact, he said, dost thou believe on the Son of God? Look at verse 35. When Jesus heard that the man had been put out, he went and found him and said, I got to ask you a question now. He said, do you believe on the Son of God? And then the man answered him and said, who is he, Lord? And that I might believe. I want to believe. I just don't know where to put my faith. And Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe. And to show you I believe, I'm going down on my knees. And I'm bowing in humble submission to you. I'm embracing you with everything that is in me. Why? Because you have restored my function. You have helped me to reclaim that which God has called me to do. I can now direct my praise toward what I know is God in the flesh. And you know what? Jesus had to get awfully happy with the man because he was now doing what God intended him to do when he created him. He's now doing what God wanted him to do, gave him the potential to do when he allowed him to be born with an affliction. He is now rendering his service to God. He's honoring God and he's ready to serve others because he is held steadfast in the midst of a trial. His life is now focused and his life now has direction. Why? He's back where he belongs, honoring God. Now, friends, I want to close because God's saying some of us are going to have to go through something. Some of us are going to have to suffer something. Some of us are going to have a faith that says, nevertheless, it does not matter what comes our way. We're not going anywhere. We're not throwing in the towel. Just because God allows trials to come our way, there isn't enough trials to come my way to make me forget all the goodness God has done for me. There's not enough trials and afflictions to come my way to eradicate all of the mercies that I have received. I've received enough mercy that if God stopped right now, I don't need another one until I go on to glory. Why? Because God is good and he's worthy to be praised, and I'm going to serve him. I'm going to serve him. I'm going to serve him. I'm going to give him back what he designed me to give. To give him the praise and to give him the glory. And you know the beauty of this passage is that it reminds me of the gospel. Because the gospel is all about whenever. Whenever. Whenever I turn my face toward heaven, I'll find an open door. Whenever I yield myself to the Lord, he'll do great and marvelous things. Whenever I give my life to preparing my mind to be of service to God in that world, God is going to help me. Whenever I make him first, he's not going to forget about my needs. I'm glad for a gospel that says whenever. God can use whoever. Whoever makes himself available to God. God says, I will in no wise cast out. They cast him out, but God took him in. Because why? God says, my favor rests upon whoever yields himself to me. In the gospel, we have a gospel of whenever, and we have a gospel of whoever. Whoever turns to him, does not matter what your former circumstance is, he'll reclaim your life and use it to his glory. And whenever he gets ready to do it, whenever a person gets ready to say, not my will but thine, even if it's on a cross, even if it's in the midnight hour of your life, even when the sun is setting, if you say, God, I remember me when you enter your kingdom, it's never too late. It's never. I want to pray with somebody tonight. Because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is wanting to use our lives to the maximum, to his glory. More than anything, he wants to do something to help us retool, reprogram our minds. Because the devil, if he does any one thing, he gets in our head and start telling us what we can't do. It'd been very easy for this blind man to have sat there and said, you know what, I've been blind from my birth. And do a head job on himself. Talk himself out of the possibility that God has in mind for him. That's the reason I'm so glad for this story. To remind us that God is calling us to something good and something big. Something that's worth trusting him. But it's the renewal of our minds. And every time we engage in it, we are bringing honor to God. God, I need you to renew my mind. Because I know you have victory for me, not defeat. I know you have a blessing, not simply a curse. And I know that there's a work, there's a calling that you have for my life. And I want you to help me prepare myself for that. And I know some of you have to be going through some trials in your life. And I just merely stopped by long enough to say, be encouraged. Fight the good fight of faith. Problems come. We don't always understand why. But God is even able to use your affliction to his glory. If you are committed to honoring him and doing his will. And in the end, he can use our lives like he used that blind man's life to touch millions around this world with the story of faith and the story of persevering faith. If you want to come to the Lord tonight, if you want God to bless you, if you even want to renew your faith, your walk in him, I'm going to ask while this praise team may be singing a quiet hymn that feel free to get up from where you are. I'm going to have prayer for some of you because I know what it's like to face tough times and have to trust God to get you through it. He got this man through it and he'll get us through it as well. Would you stand with me? And if you'd like to come forward for this prayer, please do so, you know, at this time.